山有我的情，重重的佛事我的身，天上的星是爱人的神，陪伴下山有我的情，重重的佛是我的神，天上的心是爱人的神，陪伴小扶贫，相爱的手又来得真，主的爱是我的神，天上的心是主母的爱，陪伴小扶贫。上的心是爱人的神，陪伴小扶贫，相爱的手又来得真，主母的爱是我的神，天上的心是主母的爱，陪伴小孩子。
This is UMFM 101.5. Good afternoon, and welcome to UTalk. It's a program dedicated to diversity, highlighting native-born and new Canadians' cultures and experiences. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. We'll hear more from the talented Phoebe Mann and her taiko drums throughout the program. The audio is from the Ethnic Music Concert Series by U Multicultural. Visit u-channel.ca for more cultural programming like the concert series and UTalk. Secondary school can be a challenge. Finding your work-life balance staying focused on your studies. But it's also an exciting experience, learning new things and meeting people from all over the world. In today's episode, we'll talk with two international students, one still completing their studies and the other who recently graduated and are establishing themselves in the workforce. Talani is pursuing a career in STEM and was recently elected as the international student's representative for the upcoming school year.
I'm Talani. I am an international student from Nigeria, and I moved here about 4 years ago. So I'm currently in my fourth year and the Faculty of Science taking a microbiome degree. And I am currently leaving with family right now in Winnipeg. So that's a lot of fun. And I actually haven't gone back home to Nigeria since I came here. So hoping that happens sometime soon, maybe when COVID dies down, but who knows, right? But yeah, it's a little about me.
Yeah, it'd be really nice to travel again. That's something I've been wanting to do, go visit places.
Absolutely.
You know, when you're stuck in home, you're going a little crazy. So tell me your studies and kind of what attracted you to, you know, kind of pursue studies in STEM.
For me, it's always just been science. And I know that's a very typical answer, like everyone, you know. But really, as always been, I think since I was younger, I've always said, I've always known that I wanted to do science. And I think in Nigeria, when you're in a grade, I think like in grade grade nine, parents like in grade nine, they get you to, so we like split. So we don't call it grade nine. We call it like junior secondary school and senior secondary school. So then when you're moving from junior secondary school, you actually have this department already, like compared to just like doing a general. So you have science, you have arts, and then you have like commercial, which is like the business kind of side. So like we already kind of like split into those three different departments. So like knowing that I want to do science as in, it's been since then, because I was in science even in high school. So yeah, it's just always been like that. Just like the curious mind wanted to find answers to stuff and just being really curious. I love long-term studying. I think studying really is like an interesting thing. You know, you gain new knowledge, and the field of science is also not like stagnant. Like it changes almost every single time. Like just saying something is this way doesn't mean it's always going to be that way even in the future. Like you can get someone come up and be like, I found something and that's not exactly what it is, or like what you said it was wasn't what I found out, and that kind of changes. And like that really interests me, and yeah, it's been exactly why. And I honestly can't really picture myself doing something else, because I feel like I would just really hate it. but that's that.
Well, it's great that you found something that you're incredibly passionate about. And yeah, like you're talking with how it's always changes. Yeah, there's always new technology or new discoveries changing it up. Yeah, so that sounds great, like getting in there.
Yeah.
It also sounds like schooling back home for you was really robust, kind of like getting kids involved into what they want to do right away.
Yeah, it was. And honestly, like, I honestly didn't think about it. I guess before coming here, I thought it was kind of like similar to like what everyone kind of does as well. And like, I guess that is good. It has its pros and cons, I guess, because like for someone like me, it's like a pro, right? Because I have been taking chem and bio and physics like right from time. But for someone that didn't know what they want to do from starting time, like let's say I decided to go into science, but now I'm like finding out that I don't really like science and, you know, I like arts, then it's going to be really hard changing, because I don't really have all those like basics and backgrounds that, I mean, I have to like take a lot of high school courses. So I guess it does have its pros and cons, but it's one of those things, right?
Yeah. So how has studying been in Canada? How have you been liking the studies here?
I actually quite like it better compared to back home, because back home, there's a lot of rigid structure concerning, like, surrounding your studies. Like, you don't really have that flexibility, like, picking your courses or picking the time or picking the prof. It's just, like, your first year, you have to take those courses and that's it, right? And, like, mm-hmm. like sometimes, you know, like, we all don't study at the same pace. And I might want to do this thing, you know, I don't want to do this other thing. But if you're creating that, like, that you're forcing me to do it, then that doesn't leave me that much time to explore and check out something else. So like that, I love that flexibility that it gives, you know, being able to pick your own courses and explore like you have options for electives and, you know, try something else and stuff like that. So I really like that. And the profs are like compared to like back home, I feel like a lot of profs were like, I don't know how to put it, but your lives are pretty much dependent on your profs, technically. Like, I never went to university back home, but, like, from what I hear from my friends, like, your prof can pretty much make or mar your degree. Like, let's say you were being rude to a prof, and, you know, like, they can, like, pretty much decide, oh, well, you they can, like, I don't know, take down your grade or, like, lower it. I mean, there will probably be, like, you know, like, some questions, like, if you report something, but not to the extent that it is here, that, you know, like, a prof can just can't decide that this is a grade you get and they can, like, just manipulate it. That's not possible, right? And, like, you all have all the systems in place that if a student feel unfair, like, their grade that are given to them is unfair, then they can, like, there's a step that you can go towards that, but I don't think that's the same back home necessarily. So, like, it really just gives, like, the students, like, the freedom to be able to, like, you know, do stuff, and, like, it creates that fairness that I know that the grades that I get is probably going to be fair when I do get it, and knowing that my hard work, like, what I get is a result of the work that I put in, kind of thing, compared to, like, back home where it's like, oh, well, I'm not really sure now if what, like, my hard work is paying off, right? And just everything else, like, there are different factors, so that definitely makes things a little more better. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it sounds like education is more in your hands here.
Absolutely, like, you have that control, right? And that's definitely great.
So, what are you hoping to get into once you're done schooling?
Actually, you want to get into medicine. Now, let's see, that's, I know it's a long journey, but as I mentioned earlier, I love lifelong studying, and just, like, I can't picture myself growing up not being able to continue studying or, like, just, like, doing something along that line, which is exactly probably one of the reasons why I want to go into medicine as well. So, yeah, let's really hope, and I'm graduating soon, so that means that process is coming pretty closer sooner than I think, or so, yeah, really looking forward to that.
What sort of medicine would you like to focus in?
That's a great question. I don't know. And I really am really just, like, opening myself up to, like, opportunities, like, being able to, like, explore what's out there. And I think I know, like, just having that knowledge that I don't have to pick now, like, I don't have to pick what specialization that I want to do now. It's really great. I guess that's something left for me to figure out as time goes on.
Yeah, just kind of follow the road and kind of see, like, where it brings you.
Whatever it falls through, right? Like, whatever it comes. So that's exciting.
Well, yeah, you never know what sort of new technology will come out. And you're like, well, that's what I want to do now.
Sure, right?
Something that never existed before.
Yeah, I feel like there's, like, new specialties that are getting hearted on. Like, there are even something you don't know, right? Like, it's usually just the physician and the, you know, cardiologist, surgeon and stuff. But I feel like it goes more than that. There's, like, other stuff that people like me don't know yet until you actually get in there. So that's the exciting part.
For people that are, you know, going into post-secondary education and wanting to pursue STEM, what sort of advice would you give them? And what sort of mindset should they be in, you know, to pursue kind of a career in those fields?
I feel like a lot of people, like, you know, Shelly, people that are going to postgraduate and, you know, courses like that, there is a big focus in your grades, and, you know, like, you have to keep up your grades in undergrad especially, so there's this, like, whole stress and running around, like, trying to get the perfect grades, and that's fine, like, that's absolutely perfect, like, you know, like, you definitely need those grades, but I feel like learning definitely goes beyond that, and, like, it definitely is more than that. Like, definitely you have to keep up your grades, right, as I mentioned, and you have to do well, but you also have to, like, make sure that you're actually learning from those courses, and it's definitely more than just grades. I think one of my profs in one of my classes was talking about how one of her past students sent an application, because, like, I think for med you need, like, a reference, like, you need some prof or someone that knows you to write a reference, and there was a question in there that was asking, like, does the student tend to focus more on grade, or do they focus more on learning? And I think that's, like, really important. And, like, actually profs actually see that too. Like, if you're a student who's more just like, okay, I just need to get an A plus or an A in this class and that's it. Like, it definitely goes so much beyond that. And, you know, like, volunteering, getting involved and stuff like that, like, those are things that actually make up who you are. And eventually, like, those are things that build your character. And, like, you know, definitely university goes more than that grade. And get out there, look for things that interest you, and build your experiences is definitely what I'm trying to say.
Of course, you know, it's kind of a fundamental part of a young adult's life, kind of becoming the person who they're going to be, like coming from home and experiencing different people and cultures all in one place.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, I'm not saying don't focus on the grade. It's more like saying find a middle ground between, you know, like actually learning and gaining experiences and focusing on the grade, because eventually the grades do matter, right?
Mm-hmm. The grades matter, but you also don't want to burn yourself out at the same time.
Exactly.
So what was the process like coming to study in a different country? What does that look like?
Definitely is like a long process. Like I think for me, even after I graduated high school, it took about like a year before I could come here. And I definitely was one of the lucky ones because I had families here already. So I was able to like, you know, my families were able to like help me out with that whole process and, you know, navigating the whole thing and helping me understand what the application is or how to fill an application form or getting a study permit or getting a passport and stuff like that. So like, yeah, definitely is complicated. And, you know, most times people actually do need people. Like, I don't know, like an agent or someone that could lead you through the whole thing. But, you know, eventually it definitely is worth it. Like the amount of stress and time that goes into that, at least for me. So, yeah, like if that's something you're considering, then I would say go for it.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give your younger self through going through that process?
I guess it would definitely just be like, patient and not stress out about things. Like I know, like coming, like moving to a different country is definitely super exciting. And, you know, like you get to try a lot of things, but I think for me, I was also like pretty nervous. Like, I think I was age 15 when I left home. And leaving home at that age isn't exactly the easiest thing because you're really moving away from things that are comfortable and parents and, you know, friends and moving to a completely new country. But as I mentioned, lucky for me, I had families, right? So I didn't have to go through it by myself, but there really are some other people that don't. And, you know, it's a really scary time. But I think but even with that, I still was stressed out. Like there was literally a part of my mind while being on that plane and traveling here, there was a part that was like, am I really gonna thrive? Am I gonna thrive in this new country that I'm going to? And how is that exactly gonna be like? And, you know, am I gonna make new friends? How is school going to go? And how's my life going to be like and stuff like that? But I think people were pretty nice. I think it's not really a myth when hearing that Canadians are nice. I mean, it's not everybody, but I feel like a huge portion of people are pretty nice. And, you know, just like let yourself up to try new things and, you know, like don't be shy. Put yourself out there is definitely an advice I would give to my younger self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have family here. So were you familiar with Canada before moving, or was it still a massive culture shock
when you came over? Like, honestly, I feel like no matter how much you do your research, no matter how much you know about it, and no matter how much people tell you about it, it's still going to be a big culture shock. Like actually getting to experience it yourself. Like, you know, you get people tell you, oh, Winnipeg is called Winterpeg and it's pretty cold. It's colder than a freezer, but you don't actually know how cold it is until you actually get to experience it yourself. It's like, oh my gosh, it is cold as the sad. But, and not just that, like there are other things, and like, you know, like it definitely, no matter how much you try to avoid it, it's definitely still going to be a huge culture shock and a huge adjustment. So yeah, I guess just keep that in mind.
Yeah, that must be so crazy, like, you know, experiencing kind of like Canadian winters for the first time. Like, I can't even imagine what going from... Because, you know, for Canada born, we're just like, yeah, it's winter. Yay. Let's kind of sit through it.
Yeah, I know. I think lucky for me, like the first year I got here, I think 2017, that year it wasn't super duper cold. So like I had a little adjustment, like trying to adjust the weather because it wasn't like all crazy. I mean, that was like, you know, a couple snowstorm and a couple like blizzard or whatever, but for the most winter it wasn't like excessively cold, so that was great. Because I can imagine just like landing into like negative something like right away. And I think I came in the summer as well, and I didn't come in the winter, so I had a little adjustment going into that. Like, I was able to
a little bit of buffer.
Ease in from like fall to like winter, you know, just right away into the winter, and that would be crazy. But
With education from two countries, do you think that has helped benefit you through your studies?
As I mentioned, I feel like there's pros and cons to everything. Like, definitely did in my first year. Like, I think most of the courses that I took in my first, and I'm pretty sure it probably is similar to like, same to like a lot of like Canadians, like domestic students as well. But I think a lot of my first year courses, I've learned a lot of the materials back in high school. So like that was really helpful. Like Shelly, I've been to like adjust from, I think I had a lot of problem, which is something similar common for like a lot of international students, right? Like you're transitioning from hearing your profs talk the same as you to hearing profs that are speaking really fast English. And I mean, for me, I came from a country where English was an official language, so I didn't have to learn English from the start, which, oh my gosh, that was so good, lucky. But I still had to like, you know, adjust to like the rate at which people speak and how they speak and, you know, different pronunciation and stuff. So like that took a lot of adjusting. And, you know, like I was sitting in the class that I can understand half the stuff the prof said, and that made it definitely harder understanding material. But I haven't learned a lot of the stuff from like high school, and having that background, I think it really helped going through like that period of time. And yeah, I feel like a lot of the, and like in my high school as well, like just because you were in science doesn't mean you were only taking science courses, right? Like I took a lot of extra, like we took a lot of courses, like 18 or it was a huge amount number of courses that I had to take in high school. And I think that is still helping me now, like being able to like maintain, you know, like taking 5 courses in a semester and being able to maintain that. I think that kind of stems from there.
You already experienced that.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like the course load is, I mean, it's definitely gotten like a lot harder, I think, as you move on into your degree, but it definitely made it like a lot easier, like transitioning. And, you know, I was able to like I learned, like I took economics in high school, and I know that's not the same, like a lot of domestic students cannot say that. And that was like an elective choice for me here, so I was able to take that as well, and that didn't make it as hard. And yeah, so like things like that are like the pros, like the benefits that I would say I gained from that. But yeah, that was definitely good.
Of course. So you were elected International Students Representative. So what was your reaction when you were chosen for this role, and you know, what does it all entail?
I mean, I was definitely like shocked because I had a second person that was also running, and honestly, I love her. I know her as well, so it wasn't like someone that I didn't know, and we were both like, I honestly felt like if she had gotten the position as well, it would have been like, you know, it was a win-win for the international community, because I know our work ethic and how she works, and you know, her policies were almost pretty similar to mine. So but definitely was a shock. And, you know, I wasn't like, I think I was preparing myself for a failure rather than a success. So just so it made it easier to accept the news if I didn't get in. But yeah, I did get in. And I feel like right now, like I feel like it's now up to me to be able to make the voices of internationalists and the, you know, community heard, like, you know, make things a bit more comfortable, and people are moving here for better life, you know, to get more better education and to get a better life. And you know, we have to make sure that they're getting just that. And like people are moving away from parents and families and stuff. Like, so like, I feel like it's left to like the international community here to be able to accept them and to even have a community to begin with. And I feel like those are things that I have to work with, like in conjunction with like other international student reps and faculties or other students and stuff. So yeah, I'm really excited to get into that and see how that goes. And hopefully that goes well. But
that sounds great though, you know, having that community for people to kind of like bounce off of each other and help each other out in order to, you know, succeed, because that's what we all want. We just want everyone to each other to succeed.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Is there anything else that you'd like to just share in regards to, you know, an international student, what sort of things people should know when coming over?
I think A big one would definitely be like finding that community, as I mentioned, because it's definitely hard. Like for some people, they really have to leave by themselves and experience life by themselves and go through life by themselves. But I think knowing that you don't have to is the main message. Like, there are communities out there, and you just really have to find where you belong. And once you do, trust me, things are gonna be so much better and just go so much smoother. And you know, and you like have a community of people that it's not just you when you have a problem, you can like go to, or you know, do things together and get through this whole hard transitioning together. And like, just actively seek out for these communities. And I know there are a lot of them in campus, like student groups or volunteering and stuff like that. Just find where you belong, and you know, finding what you like as well helps with that. Like what interests you is a definite big factor there as well. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give people who are going to be experiencing a Canadian winter for their first time?
Layers is the big one. Absolute layers. I mean, it's great that you want to dress for first fashion, and that's absolutely great. And you know, you can always put on that layers over your fancy clothes, and when you actually get inside, take it off. But don't think you want to dress with a fashion when there's actually like minus 40. And I mean, there are like, I guess, fashionable winter jackets out there. So I guess if that's something you're into, then go for it. But definitely layers, like wear layers and double layers and double layers. And yeah, that definitely helps. Stack up those layers. You definitely benefit from them. But
yeah, because no one wants to get frostbite.
Not good. No, absolutely not.
想陶醉，一般乐事，一般你。 令人流泪，梦如人生快乐永记取，被苦深刻从骨髓，笑话虚死鬼暗中追随，逝去了的都已逝去，
studying in both Ghana and Canada. Gloria Makafwi-Dovo has an in-depth perspective from both countries and has utilized that knowledge in her studies. She is an experienced outreach coordinator with a demonstrated history of working in the civic and social organization industry. Tune in to 101.5 FM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories and music from fantastic people across Canada. I'm Ryan Funk. This was You Talk, and have yourself a good one.
So my name is Gloria Makafwi-Dovo, and I come from Ghana in West Africa. And I come from quite a large family, and I'm the last child of my parents. So in terms of my background, I attended my primary education all through to university, all in Ghana, and I came to Canada in 2018, fall of 2018. And what I do for a living, I work with a not-for-profit organization here in Winnipeg that it seeks to empower newcomers and also just to integrate into the Manitoban society. Basically, that's what we do. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And I can definitely relate to the large family. My background is Mennonite, and the community I come from, there's some people that have like 12 siblings, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, it's quite large, but not as large as 12. Like together, and we are about 8. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely understand those extended families. Yeah, when yeah, Mennonites have a family gathering, it turns into a large ordeal.
Yeah, it's a party. Same here.
Fantastic. So yeah, you you recently achieved your master's degree in developmental practice. How about just go over exactly what this is and what attracted you to take these kind of studies in the first place?
The Masters in Development Practice Program, which we call MDP, it's a multidisciplinary program, which has its global association in the Earth Institute at Columbia University in New York. And how I found the program was very interesting. My dad actually found the program, but then I already had interest in community development and participatory development. So it was really a good fit. And before I came to the program, I didn't really know that it was a family until I got here. It was like a family. It has become a lifestyle to say the least, because it's made me empathetic. It's made me understand people's perspective. And it's really a good program, to be honest. It's really good.
Yeah. Just walk me through a little bit about the studies and what you all learned. And just from the sound of it, anything that makes someone more empathetic or more understanding, that's great.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So just a background story before that. I had my first degree in geography with a focus on resource development. And I majored in that. And it was about human development with a minor in sociology, for which I wrote, I published a dissertation on the livelihood conditions of female street headload porters in a suburb in Ghana, in the capital city of Ghana, Accra. So just a little story about the headload porters. These are young women who migrate from the northern part of the country, which is typically economically deprived. So they come down south in search of better opportunities, and they end up facing a myriad of difficulties. So I was just trying to understand why, like, the push and the pull factors that constituted their migration. So from there, I became very much involved in community development. I also volunteered in so many other things. So it was a very good fit for me to come to the MDP. And for the MDP, it was focused mainly in indigenous development. So knowing about the indigenous culture, and then we came for a whole 1 week or two orientation at Fisher River Cree Nation. So we participated in ceremonies, we participated in like medicine picking, so many fun activities. Like it was sacred, and then it was interesting because most of the activities, the ceremonies, yeah, were kind of similar to what we used to do back home in my culture. With the MDP, we had various courses across board in health, environment, in like you just name it. We even had an indigenous elder who used to take us through courses. So it was like a holistic form of learning, I would say. It was holistic, and then it was a family. Like, yeah.
Wow, that sounds nice. And then it just was an easy transition into your other studies?
Exactly. Because like it was something that I had kind of not exactly done the same thing, but then had a full like knowledge and then interest. Yes, I would say it's interest that's made me want to apply. And oh, the MDP also had an option of having two practicums, so one international, one local, and it helps you get to know more about the community work, not just on paper, but hands-on learning, and also just, as I said, being empathetic, understanding people's point of view and not always dominating. Yeah. So it was a bottom-up approach.
Yeah. It really sounds like you're really passionate about helping others. Is that something that's, you know, always interested you or always kind of driven you to help others?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I participated in various volunteer activities back home in Ghana, and even here in Winnipeg, I also engaged in them. So my very first volunteer community-led or grassroots initiative was a not-for-profit called Support for People's Foundation. And that foundation was mainly to support less privileged children in Ghana, like in some selected schools, by providing them with basic stationery and other things. So like, it's just been, at the beginning, it was just fun to just try and be like, oh, a part of something. But then growing up and then getting to understand people's very, like, should I say, deep realities, it made me appreciative of life for myself, and also try to do as much as I can. It doesn't mean I'm like too rich to be helping people, but then if I could help even with a kind word, I think that's something that I've grown into. And the MDP has also become like a lifestyle. So it's very, it helps, like it has helped me so much. Yeah. And I think that's what probably like has landed me into this, my job now.
So how about we focus a little bit about your job, what exactly you all do, and kind of some of the current projects that are underway.
So I mainly work in related to mental health and COVID, the COVID pandemic right now, the COVID-19 pandemic. So just supports various ethnocultural communities that are in Winnipeg and in Manitoba with various activities. So for instance, we recently had a youth program, and then we had women's program, seniors program. So just activities that would engage community and also make like it's community led, not done for the community. So it's just to make people know that this is also going to pass, and then we are all in this together. So that's what we just do, supporting community in any way we can, in terms of financial, mental health support, and yeah, just supporting community, basically.
I mean, that's incredibly important. I mean, for many people, they feel incredibly alone right now, not able to see friends or family. Yeah.
And social media, or should I say technology, like right now, Zoom, everything, like it's really, even though it doesn't feel the same, it's at least bridging the gap between like the in-person and all of that. So we've used it a lot, and it's really, we got feedback concerning like all the activities that we've had, and people are very like happy about it, should I say. And people are lonely, as you mentioned, so all of these things are just a way to lighten up the mood, because yeah, we'll get past this first, hopefully.
So is this kind of like a term position during COVID, or will the your responsibilities, you know, transition once we finally, sooner or later, get out of this whole pandemic?
So as of now, I'm not very sure, but then fingers crossed, who knows? But I'm still like just open for more opportunities, you know, never limit yourself. So I'm just open for more opportunities as they come.
What would you like to do?
So basically, also, like as I've mentioned, community development, work in the development sector, just being there for people. Even like, as I mentioned, I'm not rich, but then the support, and then bring some expertise, knowledge, and also learn from people. Yeah, so basically that's working in the settlement sector. And I have a very big interest in migration. So in the migration sector, it's really something that I look forward to.
I mean, there's always people moving to Canada.
Exactly, yeah. And also, I mentioned that the MDP is like a global association. It has a global association in the F Institute. So it kind of like boils down on global development. In like, our program actually started off from the Millennium Development Goals. So it's like just about global development and any form of like participatory or community development. So I'm interested in those things. And also, after my first degree, I had opportunity of working with a research consortium called the Migrating Out of Poverty. So through that, it's just like I had the opportunity of working with the migration data, like just managing the data. And it's very interesting that now I'm a part of that migration data, because like migrated and came here, because like there's so many obstacles factors. There's something called the push and pull factors, what pulls people from to one place, and then what pushes people away, all of those things. And also the intransits, what people face. And now I'm here in a destination region, so what people also face in here. So it's just about community development, global development. So in any way, any opportunity that I get in those fields, I'll be very, very, very glad to do. Yeah.
So how about we talk a little bit about education? You went to school both in Ghana and Canada. Maybe go over a little bit about, you know, just your thoughts on the importance of getting an education, and, you know, kind of the differences that you've experienced in the education in these two countries.
So with regards to education, for me personally, I think education is important. And for my family, education is like really, really important. It's not like a competition, but then all my siblings and I have master's degrees as of now, and one of us has two master's degrees. So it's like, it's not a competition, as I mentioned, but then there is too much motivation in the system to not want to achieve too much. So for my family and myself, it's very important. So coming here to study, one of the differences, the major differences that I realized was the class size with the University of Winnipeg. Okay, I think it's a graduate program, because even back in Ghana, I assisted some professors with their classes in the graduate program, and they were small classes. So I think if I were in graduate school in Ghana as well, I'll be in a small class. So that's the difference, the class size for my first degree. Because the first degree, the professor didn't know me by name. But over here, even when I didn't want to get noticed, it's noticed. So I think that's the difference, the class size. And the second thing is also the financial aspect. So for my first degree, I practically, like, my dad was like, go to school and then study. That was it. I was just studying. And he handled all the financial. But coming here, I had to manage both for myself. And all I can say, it wasn't a joke. Yeah. So that was a very harsh reality I had to learn, like, when I came here. And I thought I was having a problem when I was back home with my undergraduate. I was like, oh, I have to study all of these things. But coming here, I realized I didn't have a problem, but I was still complaining. So two major differences, class size, and then having to pay my tuition and study on top of that. Those are the two big differences that I have realized. Yeah.
I mean, it's never bad to get those kind of eye-opening experiences. It helps you grow as an individual.
Yeah, it's really helped me grow endlessly, like, because I know education is important, but then the financial aspect could either make or break it. So I'm very much conscious of that. Yeah.
So the work you do in civic and social organizations and industries, what would you like to see change for the better in social development? We're really honored to be here.
I would really like to see a lot of things change, but then, you know, it's one step at a time, or probably I would say we take it one day at a time. So as of now, I think access to information is a big thing, because I think it's quick with the help of social media now. We have, like, it's moving faster, but I think it could be a lot more quicker, because, for instance, if the information is old and you work with it and then you find out that, oh, it was old, like, your work is just as much redundant as anything. So you just keep working on old data and then you find out that it's past. So you think information should get to maybe people in the settlement sector quicker, and it will help a great deal. So that's something that I think could be worked on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we need to, you know, focus on being a collective. If part of the population isn't getting education or able to transition into jobs that require degrees, then it kind of, like, pulls us all down.
All down, exactly. It pulls us all back, because, like, we're trying to move ahead, but we can't leave anyone behind, because there's something in the global goals, that is sustainable development goals, that says leaving no one behind. So trying to all move together, but then if you don't have access, I don't know how all of us can keep moving. So that's one of the major things.
How do you think we can kind of shift and adjust that kind of individualistic mindset? As we're, you know, just in Western culture, it's very individualistic. How do we work on shifting those ideologies and principles toward more collective, you know, working together?
That's really a good question. Yeah. So for me, I think it starts maybe even with the family, because personally, my dad always keeps talking about how we need to be communal, how we need to think about the other person, how we need, like, so it, I think it's, it could start from the family when parents instill that in the younger generation, that we need to care about the other person and also not just ourselves, because you never know what's happening, what will happen, like, in the very near future. So I think it starts from the family, and also with people who are already grown up. I think it's about the personal agency to want to help the other person, not just look for, like, opportunities or look out for only yourself, because sometimes it's hard, but then, you know, we can't leave other people behind. Those people that are left behind may end up coming back to hurt you. So if you help them from the start, I think they'll be okay with themselves. Like, this is just, like, I'm maybe saying it as lightly as I am saying it, but then putting in an effort, the human agency to help other people really goes a long way. So,
yeah, I definitely can understand that, where, you know, if you do something nice for someone else, they're likely to turn around and do that for someone else as well in need, and then you can kind of, like, build it up. From there.
True. Yeah. So I think maybe helping, like, just knowing that it's not all about you. It's really, like, the human agency. People who are already grown up, you don't, like, the family cannot really instill that again. But then it's just up to the individual to want to help other people.
Thank you very much. So access to information, a more collective ideology and outlook. What are some other things that you would like to kind of see addressed, or that, you know, we can work towards?
So another thing, yeah, so this is something that I had in my master's degree, my major research paper. It was about gendered homelessness in Winnipeg. So women who are homeless in Winnipeg, was just trying to look at the services available to specifically to women. And I realized there's so many gaps in there, because women, for instance, who have children, are likely not to access homeless shelters because of, one, safety, sanitation, and all of that. So I think that maybe the, if this is not too big to ask, housing is a very big issue. Like some houses available right now are vacant, but then people are on the street. So like there's like, it's really difficult to understand. It's not as easy as I'm saying, but it's very difficult to understand that there are empty rooms whilst people on the street. And recently someone died in the cold because like he had nowhere to sleep. And we are all saying, oh, we are all in this together and all of these things, but we are not really all in all, like we are all not in this together because people are really suffering and some people are just enjoying. To be honest, I think like there's more to be done in houses.
Housing, homelessness.
Yeah, because like when I did my research, I knew it was a research paper, but it was getting to me, like I was like, okay, so this is a very serious thing. Why would people, not just women, but then why would people be on the streets while some houses are empty? And also, I also found out that some, there's a term called renoviction. Landlords take people out of their houses in the name of renovating it. And then they are really not renovating it, but they're just trying to get it to like become better at a higher price for other people.
Yeah, so they get you out, they increase the price, and then you can no longer afford it.
Exactly. So I feel like there's so much that this, I don't know, world needs to work on. But the more I talk about it, it makes me sad. So I don't really talk about it always. A little I can do.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that when you kind of see the suffering in the world and you want to make a difference, but you know, the changes that are happening are slow, and you just want people to be happy and healthy.
Exactly.
At the end of the day,
life is so short, so at least we should enjoy it, not like suffer. And then like, it's very sad. It's very sad, to be honest. And like looking at this whole thing I talked about, like women who are homeless, sometimes even women in abusive relationships are considered homeless by their definition. So you could be in their home, but then if you are not happy, or yeah, you are still homeless. So like, it's just a lot of things that sometimes I don't think my heart can take it because it's so, but yeah, one day at a time.
Yeah, one day. I know, saw a person online talking, and they're saying that if we had more services available, we wouldn't have to rely on charities.
Exactly.
Or philanthropy.
Exactly, exactly. That's true. I think the charity sector, yeah, they're trying to like fill in the gaps, and they're really doing an amazing job, like, to be honest. With this COVID happening, like, you'd see that, oh my God, this is going on, like, it's really good. So they are filling the gaps, assuming like there was something else. I don't think they'll be existing, but you know.
Yeah, there's people doing good out there.
Exactly. Yeah, really, really.
And but it would be nice if there were more systems in place where it didn't fall on the responsibilities of the individuals, and us as a collective could take care of each other.
True, very true. Yeah, very true.
That's just my hope for the future, my kind of dream as well.
Exactly, my hope for the future. But like, there's really hope, but then, you know, in the moment, what is happening is like sad. But then, yeah, we're working on it day by day. And, yeah.
So you mentioned you all knew a lot about migration. You kind of did a study and saw the data on that. I guess just what are some of the things or trends that you're seeing as someone who moved to Canada yourself? Some of the struggle, the hurdles that can kind of come up, some of the challenges, and what can be, you know, adjusted or changed based on your own experiences to, you know, make that transition moving here, you know, more seamless.
Wow. So I came here about, say, this is my third year. So coming here, we had to pay a lot of money to kind of get your visa. And I came as an international student, so I had to have some money to prove that I could pay my tuition. And also, you know, medicals, you have to also buy the flight ticket, which is like, you don't, sometimes you get the admission about just a few months before you come, and then, you know, flight tickets are very expensive around that time. So like, it's just a lot of money that if you do not have it, coming as an international student is a different story. So this is my personal like journey. I came as an international student. So come to think of it, people who come as, how do I call it, asylum seekers and all of that, some of them do not have money. So I feel like the migration industry kind of is a big money business, like, to be honest, because the little, like, even for me alone, if I calculate the amount I paid, it's a lot. So if about 10,000 people are paying the amount, you can imagine how big it is. So that's like one of the things, the financial aspects is a big challenge. And then I think also that, I mentioned that I worked with the So the data, some of the trends where the people migrate, like there's something called stepwise migration. People migrate to one area first to probably make ends meet to continue to their final desired destination. So with that, some people end up like doing any kind of job, and it's like, should I say, risky and dangerous and all of those things. Some people also go on rubber dinghies through like the very dangerous Mediterranean Sea and all of that. So like, it's just like, it depends on what the person is coming to do at their desired destination. That's kind of like makes the migration either regular or irregular. So regular, I mean, if you come in as an international student, it's regular. You come by flight and all of that is regular. But people who kind of like smuggle into the country is irregular. That's per definition. But you do not really understand why people want to move. So I mentioned at the beginning, there's something called the pull and push factors. The pull factors are things that are in the desired destination that makes attracts people to come here, like for instance in Canada. And then the push factors could be war, it could be financial difficulties, it could be just a lot of things. So it's personal to an extent, and it's also not people's fault that they move. So like, one of the things that we did for the research also to get to know what was happening personally and then try to synthesize it into something big. So I can't just talk for everyone, but then it's a lot of different things. It depends on why you're coming and what's happening back where you are from that's kind of bringing you here. So there are different trends, to be honest. So many trends, so many like stories, so many, yeah. And we have to take into account all of those stories because they are very important. It's like little drops of water making a big ocean. So yeah, some of the trends that from data and from personal experience I've realized.
Tune in to 101.5 FM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories and music from fantastic people across Canada. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk, and have yourself a good one.